Diaz was born in the Dominican Republic and raised in New Jersey. A graduate of Rutgers, he is the author of Drown and The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, which won, among other prestigious awards, the National Book Critics Circle Award and the 2008 Pulitzer Prize. Diaz was awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant, a no-strings-attached $500,000 prize that comes with it. His fiction has appeared in The New Yorker, African Voices, Best American Short Stories, and in the O. Henry Prize Stories. Juno has received a fellowship from the John Simon Guggenheim Memorial Foundation, a fellowship at the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study at Harvard, and the Rome Prize from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. He is the fiction editor at the Boston Review and the Nancy Allen Professor at MIT. Today, we'll speak with him about his new book, This Is How You Lose Her. Welcome, Juno. It's a thrill to speak with you today.
Thank you for having me.
Your new book, This Is How You Lose Her, has the character Junior at the core. You've written about him before. What keeps drawing you back?
Part of it is I think I haven't really begun to address some of his most serious sort of heartbreaks. And part of it is because he strikes me as really, really complicated. I mean, in this book, I basically deal with his whole problem with intimacy, and it's given me one book, and that's not bad.
And does Junior have a lot of Juno in him?
I mean, he's got some of me, without any doubt. You know, he's got my address. He's got where I went to college. He's even got much of my landscape, some of my childhood. But we're very, very different. I mean, in some ways, I think Junior had a far easier life than I ever did. But in other ways, I think Junior's far lonelier than I ever was. And we react to heartbreak very differently. So he feels familiar, like a cousin that you've lived with for a few years, but we're not the same person.
How do you respond to readers who feel that Junior treats women very badly?
Well, I mean, who would disagree? But again, I think that part of it is we kind of scale up our judgment because we're reading it, where I think that there's a ton of juniors in our lives. Many of us have dated them. We have them as our siblings, as our relatives, as our parents. And I think that, you know, this is a baseline for a lot of male behavior. I think a lot of men take advantage of their privilege vis-a-vis women. And one of the privileges of being a man in the society that we belong to, whether you're in New Jersey or Santo Domingo, is that you can do all sorts of weird cheating type stuff and people still welcome you home. Now, that's not the same for the women that I grew up with. They couldn't behave like me and my boys did and be welcomed home. That wasn't going to happen.
Will you ever write about a successful male-female relationship? Do you believe in them?
I mean, of course I believe in them, but what interest would that be to a calamitous writer like me? I think for me, what I like is seeing how people deal with distress, how people deal with disruption, how people deal with heartbreak. There's a lot for me there. I think that there's so many stories where people meet the person of their dreams, and I think that's wonderful, and I like a lot of those stories. But what I like writing is about the tough, broken, hurt stuff.
You talk about the structure of a short story and that there are 6 or 7 patterns of a traditional short story. Can you talk about that?
Oh, God. I sometimes wish I had never spoken. I think what happens when you do enough interviews, the amount of stupid things you say sort of collect. But I mean, there certainly are very sort of discernible patterns for short stories. You know, one of them you could say is the monologue form, where the story begins and ends, has almost no sort of strange trickery. It doesn't do much with time. And, you know, it's just one person speaking. It feels like a one set period of time. You've got a second version of a story where, you know, the first opening scene is in the present. The second scene is in the past. The third scene goes back to the present, and it's the kind of alternating. There's another form of story where it opens up with the first scene being the first and the last scene, or bookend scenes from a different time and a different place, and what happens in the middle is completely different. And we could go on, but I think the structure for me is something that I'm really fascinated in, and I think that it helps both amplify and diffuse some of the themes and some of the emotions. And so therefore, it's a good dimension to play with as a storyteller.
You teach at MIT. What do your students bring to your writing?
Well, I mean, I don't know if they bring much to my writing. They bring a ton to my life. I mean, I love my young kids, you know, and many of them are older than me. I just say that as a joke mostly. It's really great to work with super brilliant, dedicated, and very, very diverse students. And it's a nice, listen, if you can do it, if you've got the heart for it, if you don't mind being irrelevant, if you don't mind being the butt of a lot of jokes, teaching is not a bad thing. It's a really great way to give back to our society, to sort of help produce the kind of young people that we're going to need for the future, critical-minded, future-looking, and hopefully amenable to the arts and compassionate.
When I was reading your book, I found you used some very descriptive Spanish sentences in your writing. I live in Miami. I took high school Spanish. Yet there were sentences I just couldn't suss out. What happens when you talk to readers in Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing that happens when readers read Les Miserables and they don't understand some of the stuff that's being said. I think it's normal for us not to get stuff in a book. It's an absolute normal part of the reading experience. It's like I always say, you can read The Hobbit and you can read The Lord of the Rings, but the pages and pages of Elvish never stop anybody. I think part of what happens when we see a language like Spanish is a part of us, I think, doesn't realize that all we have to do is reach out to someone. Even in Wisconsin, there's people who can help you with this. And if there isn't someone right now, eventually, you're going to be somewhere where somebody will help you. I think that we read a book alone, but we understand a book in a collective.
You've won a Pulitzer, and I know that you were on the Pulitzer board. What did you think about last year's award committee not awarding a prize?
Listen, you know, we're not allowed to talk about our deliberations, but I can tell you, nobody in the Pulitzer board was happy about leaving gifts on the table. I mean, being the Pulitzer board is like being Santa Claus. All we want to do is give gifts. So let's just say that the outcome didn't make any of us happy, you know, and certainly it wasn't great for the writers who didn't receive anything. It was a picayune tragedy, and for the people closest to it, a real tragedy. And again, it's, let's just say no one was happy for it, and hopefully we'll never see this again.
Yeah. And you've just recently won a MacArthur Genius Grant. What will that mean for you?
Well, I mean, shoot, after taxes, it's like $62,000 a year for 5 years. That's a big, huge cushion for somebody like me who doesn't have any kids. It's part of it means that I could write without working. Part of it means that, you know, maybe I could think about getting a place. And part of it means helping the organizations that I enjoy helping. I mean, I think those three things are happening and will happen. So it was a great honor. I have to tell you, it was a great honor. It's nice to be on something with Sandra Cisneros and Octavia Butler and, David Simon.
What's next for you?
Trying to write a book, a novel. You know, I got so, it's so weird. I got a bunch of reviews from people who were like, oh, I cannot believe he wrote a book of short stories. Hopefully he'll go back to the novel. But, you know, you can only write what you can write. And my next book is going to be a novel. It's about giant sort of mutant monsters eating everybody. We'll see where it goes.
And that title?
Monstro, hopefully.
And when might we expect to see it?
God knows. It's sort of like, when are we going to get a better democracy? You know, it's like, there's no telling. Well, hopefully I'll finish sooner than that.
All right, next 4 years, right?
Oh, God. Try to make it the next decade.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.